Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Legendary comedian Tommy Dreesen is in the studio. How are you, pal?
I'm doing real good.
You know what's great is that, I mean, you have always, you're one of the very few people that have you know, gone through, made it in Hollywood, that really still talks about Chicago with such love.
Because I love the city. It's hard to describe the feeling I have for the city, because this is where it all began for me. This is where I paid my dues, from the far south side, from Chicago Heights, working every club. You know, Tim Reed and I were America's first black and white comedy team, and the struggle we went through those years from 1969 to 1974, the dues I paid here, and then later coming back here as a single and working at Mr. Kelly's.
Yeah.
To Chicago. You know, the moment the plane lands, it's like I'm home.
You're home again. Yeah. You're home. 60 appearances on The Tonight Show, both David Letterman shows, on and off for 14 years. Toured the nation as an opening act for Frank Sinatra. And tomorrow night on Saturday, I mean, change that because it's going to also air tomorrow. And Saturday night, Chicago's very own Tommy Dreesen will perform his one-man show for one night only at the Den Theater in Wicker Park. His best-selling book is called Still Standing, His Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage in Sinatra. And you can also hear Tom now and then on the Sinatra Hours. So our Cubs pretty much at the top of the National League Central right now. It's been a while since we could say that.
And I'm so excited because, first of all, there's 8 saves that they lost where they were leading. If they would have won 4 of those saves, they'd be the winningest team in baseball right now. This guy, Craig Counsell, knows what he's doing. If they shore up that relief, and their starting pitching now is some of the best in both leagues.
Agree.
And I'm excited now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to some games while I'm here, but I'll come back in September and throw out the first pitch and take you out to the ball game.
Of course you will. And you know what's really funny is, like, we feel like it's been a long time. It's 2024. It was 2016 at the World Series, but before that, it was a long, long time. So we didn't wait that long for something to be popping again, right?
Well, you know, that I did all those jokes on The Tonight Show for years about, you know, being a fan is not someone who goes to a ballpark when the team is in first place. A fan is somebody who'd go to Wrigley Field last game in September.
That's
the Cubs
right.
are 102 games out, and you think they still have a chance. I've been there, 45 people in a whole ballpark. The crowd was so intimate, instead of the national anthem, we sang Feelings.
You know,
one vendor, yeah. I said, could I have a hot dog? He said, you only got one, just take a bite. You know, in the fourth inning, the announcer would say, will the lady with the lost 9 children please claim them? They're beating the Cubs 11-0, and all that kind of jokes.
Yeah.
And then they won. Dave, the night they won the World Series, I went to 3 of the games. And then they were in Cleveland for the final night.
Yes.
I was in Palm Springs at the Marriott Hotel in Palm Desert, and I was doing a corporate show. And I finished my show early, and I went up, and I watched that game. And when they won that game, my daughter called me, and I've made my living for 55 years speaking. I couldn't talk. I'm not making this up, Dave. I was so choked up. I couldn't talk. All those years.
Stunning.
All those things that the pressure we were through, the torture, and they finally won the World Series. It was amazing.
Does it take a lot out of your act now that they won the World Series?
Oh, yeah. There went all that, but I was glad to get rid of that material.
Yes, I would agree with you.
You know what I would have loved to have done?
Yeah.
I wish we went in business, Dave. Here's what I'd love to have done when that game was over. I wish I could have went and had wreaths made to grandmother, to grandma, to grandpa, to dads, to uncles, to aunts, all of brothers in our family that passed away that were Cub fans, that we could go to their grave and lay that wreath on there. They finally
did it.
We did it or
we
something. We could have made $20 million in
yes.
one night, you know.
Yes. You just mentioned a few minutes ago, 55 years. It's really been almost that long that you made your first appearance on stage, and it was the Playboy Clubs kind of that really kind of popped for you.
Well, my first appearance on stage was with Tim Reed. As I said, we were America's first black and white comedy team. It was at a place in Chicago Heights called the Golden Horseshoe. And that was the first time we went on stage. First time we ever paid. We did 2 shows a night, 4 nights in a row. We got $15 a piece, you know. But so from there to working our way down to Mr. Kelly's, you know, as a single, you know, I went on stage when Tim and Tom broke up. I went on stage my first time in 1974 as a single. You know, and did my first appearance on The Tonight Show in 75, and that changed my whole life.
Absolutely. It absolutely did. I was going to say, Mr. Kelly's was the place in Chicago. And you know there's some documentaries that you participated in, too, that are out there about Mr. Kelly's. It's Gibson's now. So are you heading to Gibson's at some point this weekend? Probably.
I've been there twice already.
There twice already.
In fact, I just talked to the owner, Steve Lombardo, and he's going to be at the show I'm doing for the...
At the Den?
Conrad Hilton.
Oh, no.
And he's going to be at the Den as well.
Okay. Know. Very, very, very cool. Yeah, tickets are thedentheater.com. You know, you were working construction back in the day. I'm going all the way back. And you go have a drink and listen to Sinatra on the jukebox. You were a fan like most of us. And then you got to work with him. I mean, that must have been surreal. Just even still thinking about it today.
What was surreal to me was as a little boy, I shined shoes in Harvey. And I had eight brothers and sisters, and we lived in a shack. We were very poor. If you had holes in your shoes, you put a cardboard in. If you had a window broke, you stuck a rag in it. I don't regret any of this, but I shined shoes in taverns. I set pins in bowling alleys. I caddied in the summertime, and I sold newspapers on the corner, all to help feed my brothers and sisters. And none of this do I regret. But shining shoes in the bar, Frank was on the jukebox. You know, and all the bars, and there were 36 taverns in Harvey. I shined shoes in eight of them. And Frank was on all the jukeboxes. And then years later, when I came out of the service, I was a bartender in some of those bars I shined shoes in. And I'd be closing up the bar, and the guys would be playing Sinatra, Come Fly With Me. Let's fly away. And here I was years later flying in his private jet all over the world and gracing the same stage with this man that I heard when I was shining shoes. And at one time, I carried his coffin out of a church in Beverly Hills, California, and I spoke at his funeral.
You know, amazing. So many years later.
It's been a wonderful.
His music was for the working class, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, his daughter Nancy had a wonderful expression. She said, my dad is a winner that losers identify with. You know, when Frank Sinatra wrote, you know, what people forget about Frank the most is the fact that he was a brilliant actor. He won the Academy Award. And I one night asked him in front of a lot of other stars in his home. It was Gregory Peck and Kirk Douglas and Clint Eastwood. It was it was also Jack Lemmon and Robert Wagner. And all the men were sitting around. The women had all gone to bed. And they were talking about acting and directing. And I noticed they were showing great reverence to Frank. And so it was curious. I said to him, Frank, did you ever study acting? Because in Hollywood, everybody tells you who they studied with.
Sure.
I said, did you ever study acting? And Gregory Peck grabbed my arm and said, acting lessons would have ruined him. He was a diamond in the rough you to fool with. So when you gave Frank a song, to him it was a script. What did the writer feel the night the writer took pen in hand? Frank would immerse himself in a lyric and become that lonely guy in a bar whose woman left him and he's never going to find love again. And you felt that. And you felt the joy of a song. Come fly with me.
Yeah, yeah. Your love for Frank is amazing to me always because, you know, you in Harvey, you know, you said you were shining shoes and you went to good Catholic school, hardworking parents, but like, you know, you hung out with a rough crowd and you were the jokers.
Ah, that's interesting.
And became a comedian.
We had black leather jackets, and one of the guys was a real good artist, and he painted the Joker on the back of our jacket. Little did I know, I was 15 years old, and we became the Jokers, and got into some fights and things that I don't I regret to this day. I had my nose broke twice. I boxed when I was in the Navy, so obviously I'm not a tough guy if I had my nose broke twice. Yeah. But I grew up on the streets. And Harvey, I had never seen intellectual combat. Everybody argued in Harvey. If you were arguing about the Cubs and the White Sox, they'd go outside and fight in the alley and beat each other's brains. But when I went in the service, for the first time in my life, I saw men get in deep disagreements. There'd be a black guy from Detroit, a Jewish guy from New York, a redneck from Georgia.
Sure.
And they'd get in these heated debates, and I'd think, uh-oh, they're going to throw punches at me. Yeah. But they didn't. At the end, one might say, you know, I never thought about what you were saying. So I first time in my life, I saw intellectual combat.
But even at 14 and 15 years old, when you joined this little group, like, you were kind of on your own. You were, right?
I mean, both my parents were alcoholic. At one time, my mom quit drinking, but so we grew up in this shack. We had no bathtub and no shower, no hot water. You know, it was a rat-infested, roach-infested shack. So I grew up poor. And I always say I don't have a degree from academia, but I got a doctorate from the streets.
Sure.
I grew up on the streets, you know, working in bowling alleys, working in pool rooms, you know. And none of this do I regret because it gave me a wealth of material later on.
Yeah, when I became a comedian. Has, still to this day.
Yeah.
Steve Bertrand, who's been here forever in our newsroom, stopped you, and we were talking about Lou Boudreau. And you have a story about going to see if you could meet him, but you ended up meeting somebody else.
Well, what happened was I was selling newspapers in Harvey, and it shows you how old I am. October 10th, 1948, I was a little boy, I was 10 years old, and I was selling newspapers. And cars come from everywhere, horns blowing, and people were, you know, gathering from everywhere. And I asked one of the elders, what's going on? He said, Tom, it's Lou Boudreau Day. I said, Lou Boudreau? He said, Tom, Lou Boudreau went to Thornton High School. He was an all-state basketball player. He took the high school team down the state championship 3 years in a row, and they won the state championship 1 year. He left there, went to the University of Illinois, big star. From there, he goes to the Cleveland Indians. The guy's telling me all this. He said, at age 24, he managed the Cleveland Indians and played shortstop, and they won the pennant and the World Series. He's a phenom, and today in the Hall of Fame. Wow. But he said, it's Lou Boudreau Day. And I said, wow. I sold all my newspapers because all the people were meeting by the Elks Club on 155th Street in Harvey. And there was a post office across the street. And so I sold all my newspapers, and I waited. And Lou Boudreau came out of the Elks Club after having lunch with all these stars with him. And the crowd waved to him. He said a few words. He got in the convertible, and he left. And he went down to Thornton High School to sign autographs. But I walked home, I was a little raggedy kid, and I was thinking, wow, somebody from Harvey, Illinois is famous. And as little boys do, I fantasize. I said, wow, maybe one day there'd be a parade for me. And yeah, like little boys, I'm picturing the band and all that. August 22nd, 1992, I went back to Harvey, Illinois, to that corner, 155th Street, where they named that street after me, Dreesen Street, and the man who introduced me to the crowd was Lou Boudreau.
How about that? Yeah. Dreams come true in a lot of parts of your life.
Yeah.
They really do.
Prayers are answered.
We're talking to legendary comedian Tommy Dreesen. Tommy will be at the Den Theater Saturday night. For tickets, go to Den Theater, thedentheater.com. And there's more with Tommy next on 720 WGN. So fast forward a little bit. You know, The Tonight Show and Johnny Carson, you know, that was the big break. I mean, you did a lot of stuff leading up to that, obviously. But Carson, you know, in today's age, comedians, for the most part, think on social media. And they can make an impact on social media. Do they need the late night shows like they used to? No. But back in that day, the comedy clubs and Carson were it.
Well, when I started out in showbiz, there weren't any comedy clubs. And then, after the team split up, in 1975, wherever you went in America, people say, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a stand-up comedian. The next question out of their mouth was, oh, yeah? Have you ever been on Johnny Carson? If you hadn't been on Johnny Carson, in the eyes of America, you weren't a comedian. So you might want to be one or going to be one, but you weren't one now. So there was a stairway to stardom as a comedian in those days. Get to The Tonight Show, because Freddie Prinze did one appearance on The Tonight Show, and the next day he had a sitcom.
Yeah, very good point.
I struggled for a long time trying to get The Tonight Show to come and see me. And finally, I got him to come one night. They were looking at me and a young kid named Billy Crystal. I don't know whatever happened to him.
What happened to that guy?
But I'm with Dave Pryor right now. Eat your heart out, Billy.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyhow, we both got The Tonight Show that night. But I went to The Tonight Show, and I got bumped three times in a row. Every time I went there, they'd run out of time. I'd be in makeup, taking to your green room.
I've heard those stories.
And it's
devastating.
On the fourth time, I'm in makeup, and Fred DeCordova, the producer, came in to the green to the makeup room, and he said, I got bad news for you. I said, what? He said, you're going on tonight. And now, 28 million people watch that show on that night. And if you score there, your whole life is going to change. Not only that, I'm behind that curtain, ready to go on, and they're ready to open up that curtain, and Johnny's getting ready to introduce me, and I realize my mother had everybody in Harvey, Illinois watching. If I bomb, I can't even go back home.
But you talk about 28 million people. I mean, the late night shows don't get a quarter of that these days. I mean, 28 million. I mean, that you're talking to America.
And overnight, after I did The Tonight Show, the next day, I was in the unemployment line with a wife and three kids. A man named Lee Curlin from CBS was watching the show in New York. He called and they signed me to a development deal. I got, in those days, I got $10,000 check and $1,850 a month for a year. That meant my rent was $225 a month, and I couldn't make that rent money.
Yeah.
But now my rent was paid, my groceries were paid, I could, my kids' shoes for them, I could concentrate on writing material, and my whole life changed.
Ed McMahon gave you some really interesting advice, too.
Yeah, just before I went on, he said, Tommy, remember this, and I never forgot it, and I tell comedians this all the time. He said, Tommy, have fun, and they'll have fun.
That's true.
Have fun out there, no matter what's going on.
That's true.
Have fun, and to this day, before I walk out on the stage, I say to myself, okay, let's go have some fun.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You know in your career that Mitzi Shore gave you the big break at the Comedy Store. Mm. Carson gave you the huge break on The Tonight Show, but it was Sammy Davis Jr. And there's always a backstory to some of these things, but it was Sammy Davis that gave you a boost on his national touring act.
Well, I did a show called Sammy and Company. He had a TV show, and I wanted to do that show.
It was on Channel 9. It was on WGN here in Chicago. Syndicated, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it was syndicated show, and I did his show, and I did a whole routine about growing up in Harvey, Illinois. and playing basketball on an all-black basketball team, playing football on an all-black football team. And I did routines on that, and Sammy was on the floor laughing. And he took me over to the couch, and I wasn't supposed to get couch. Yeah. You know, they said, Tom, you're just going to do stand-up.
Yeah.
But Sammy came and took me, escorted me to sit down next to him, and he told me, he said, I'm going to take you on the road with me. He took me on the road for 3 years for me to sit in the wings and watch this man perform. There was nothing can describe how great Sammy Davis Jr. was on stage. Frank Sinatra said Sammy never hit a clinker. Frank would hit a clinker once in a while. Sammy never hit a clinker. He could sing as good as anybody out there. He could dance better than anybody out there. He could do comedy as good as any comedian. He could do impressions. To me, he was the best impressionist in the country. He could play the piano, play the drums, play the trumpet. There wasn't anything he couldn't do on the stage.
It's amazing to me. Yeah. It's amazing to me. David Letterman was a lifelong friend. And honestly, loyalty is really important in this business. And he showed you that loyalty through both of his shows, through almost 30 years in show business.
Yeah, I did maybe over 50 David Letterman shows. He let me host when he had the shingles.
That's right. Remember that. It was, I will tell you, the days of people filling in for Carson were long gone by when Letterman and Leno and even Kimmel and everybody else. Kimmel actually does it once in a while too, but you know, David kind of made the way for his friends to sit down and do the show with him, and
well,
that's pretty cool.
And one thing he never forgot, David and I became friends the first day he came out to California with an old red pickup truck. You know, I came off stage at the Comedy Store, and he met me in a parking lot, and he said, I really enjoyed your set, Mr. Dreesen, you know. And
that's awesome.
And me, because I'm so extroverted, I took it to him. Oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Indianapolis. Oh, no kidding. And I started talking sports, and we became very close. I realized later, once we became friends, that he's kind of a reclusive, shy guy.
Yes, like and, Carson almost, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Carson was the same way off stage, you know. So by that time, we were friends.
Yeah.
And so we remained friends all in. And I love him to death. He calls me all the time. We have, you know.
That's great. I love hearing that. Carson used to make fun of Letterman in his red pickup truck all the time.
Yeah.
So he must have had that for a while.
I think it's in the Smithsonian
Is
Institute
really?
Now or something.
Get
yeah. He still
here.
Has that red pickup truck. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. Well, we are talking to legendary comedian Tommy Dreesen. Time always goes fast with you, man. Tommy will be at the Den Theater on Saturday night. And for tickets, go to thedentheater.com. And there's more after the top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, Dave Plyer in studio with legendary comedian Tommy Dreesen. We are talking everything. We're talking Letterman. We're talking Carson, Sammy Davis. I want to get to Sinatra because, I mean, you know, he didn't let a lot of people open up with him, open up his home to. And he did that with you his entire life. You were in Vegas, and you went to see Sinatra. How did that conversation, that connection all began?
It all began, first of all, let me say something. Two people in my life have called me Tommy Dreesen. Call me Tommy. Two people. My mom and Frank Sinatra, and now you.
That's how I know you. I do. I know
the third
you're Tommy.
Person calls
so
me
funny.
As Tommy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How it happened, I was touring after I toured with Sammy Davis for years. I toured with Smokey Robinson. I toured with
you
Mac
did.
Davis. I toured with Tony Orlando and Dawn. I toured with Frankie Avalon. I toured with James
Liza Dern. Minnelli. I mean,
Liza Minnelli. Yeah, all these. And but I was touring with Smokey, and we were at Caesars in Lake Tahoe, and Frank Sinatra was appearing next door at Harris. And I had performed at Harris, so we were there with Smokey for, I was with Smokey for 1 week, and I don't know why I chose that night. I chose a weeknight. I said, I think I'll go see Frank that night, because I had seen Frank perform here in Chicago before I was ever in show business.
I was going to ask you that. When was the first time that you saw Carson? Where was it?
At the Blackhawk Arena, the stadium there.
Okay.
It was the first time I ever saw him. I was way up in the Bob Uecker seats, way up in the top. But it was fascinating.
Yeah.
And 20,000 people in the arena, and this man walks out and does his show. And he had a comedian named Pat Henry, who I later became friends with. Now, so I called a maitre d' at Harris, and I said, I want to come over on this particular night. Why I chose that night, I don't know. But anyhow, I finished my show at Caesars in Lake Tahoe, and I ran off stage out the side door, ran over to Harris Hotel. I was running into the showroom, and the vice president of Harris Hotel was talking to a big heavyset guy with a cigar. And he said, Tommy, come here. And I went over, and he said, Tommy, this is Mickey Rudin. Well, I recognize the name. That was Frank Sinatra's lawyer, very powerful man in Beverly Hills and in our business. So he said, Holmes Hendrickson said to him, he said, Mickey, this is Tom Dreesen, and I think Tom would make a great opening act for Frank Sinatra. And the lawyer got a pained expression on his face like you heard it a million times. And he winked at the vice president, and I caught the wink, and he said, hey, kid, if I gave you a week with Frank, would you want more than 50,000? I said, Mr. Rudin, put it this way. If you gave me a week with Frank, would you want more than 50,000? He said, oh, I love this kid.
Yeah.
And a week later, they gave me a week with Frank. The second night I was with him at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City, I figured I'd work with him a week. I tried to get a picture taken with him, hanging at Gibson's and every bar in Harvey, you know. And the second night, he and his wife Barbara took me out to dinner. I can remember like it was yesterday. He set his knife and his fork down, and he looked at me and said, I like your material, and I like your style. I'd like you to do a few other dates with me if you're interested. And I didn't say, let me check my calendar.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, and it turned into 14 years, 45, 50 cities a year, an incredible friendship. Amazing. I stayed at his home six times a year. We developed this incredible friendship. At first, he was the boss of the tour. He was the boss and Mr. S. And then halfway through that, he became like a buddy. We palled around night after night. And at the end of his life, he was more like a father to me. He gave me advice all the time. And I miss him, Dave, every day of my life. I miss him. There's not a day goes by that I don't think about him.
Here's the one thing I do know about you as a person. Like, you never took that for granted. Not 1 minute of those 14 years.
No. And you know what? And I tell you something else that you bring that up. I saw Frank, he had a temper. I saw him go off on people sometimes.
Heard that a lot.
And I made up my mind, if this ever happens to me, I'm not somebody's whipping boy. If it ever happened to me, I was going to shake his hand and say, Frank, thank you for everything. Thank you for all the years, but I've got to go now. I wasn't going to get mad at him. I was grateful for, sure. But that day never came. It never came. We had such a great relationship, friendship.
Yeah. That's amazing. I'd love you to share one story. And I know you're going to be doing this on stage a lot. They're endless, by the way, folks. You're going to hear so many great stories on stage. And I love that you change it to from Harvey to Hollywood when you're back here in Chicago, because that's critical, right? I mean, that's your hometown.
Well, it's my life story. I do stand-up comedy for, 40 minutes, and then I segue to a bar, and Frank starts singing to me from the screen. It's 2:45.
Oh,
there's no one in the place except you and me. So, and then I start the storytelling with video and with still photos that authenticate the stories I'm telling.
Give me one story, just one. So many times you said, six times a year, Sinatra had you over at his place in Palm Springs. You told me endless stories about this, but give me one of your favorites, because all of them are pinch yourself moments, every one of them.
There's so many moments. You know what? He was nocturnal. He never went to bed till the sun came up. Yeah. Whether we were on the road or off the road, and he wanted you to hang with him. One of my funny stories: we've been doing one nighters all over the country, but I'll get back to the home. But we flew into Las Vegas. We're opening the Desert Inn. We did two shows that night.
Amazing.
Now
yeah.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and Frank is going strong. There's five people at the table, and we're in the back of the restaurant, and I'm tired. I get up from the table, and he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to bed." He said, "What for?" I said, "I got to get up early in the morning, go to the cemetery and visit those guys." He said, "What guys?" I said, "All those guys who died trying to stay up with you every night." He said, "Okay." And he started laughing. He said, "Go to bed."
Go to bed, yeah.
But staying at his home, he stayed up till dawn. He would come and get me out of my bungalow. He had a huge compound that had tennis courts and swimming pools and all that. But
and places for guests.
Yeah, the outer perimeters were named after a song, New York, Strangers in the Night, Tender Trap, My Way. And so and he'd come get me out of my bungalow and say, "Let's take a ride, Tom." We'd ride around till the sun came up, till dawn. But one particular night, there's so many stories, so many nights, but the one particular night that I'll never forget, he told me something very personal, really, really personal. And when he finished it, he said, "Ah." And we were heading back to the compound at that time. The sun was coming up. He said, "I shouldn't have told you that." I said, "Well, it's not going to go any further than this car." He said, I know, but I shouldn't have told you that. I said, "Well, it's not going any further than this car. And besides, it's not like we're strangers, we're friends.
Yeah.
You're not strangers." And I don't know what made me do it, but I looked at him, I went, "Strangers in the night, exchanging glances." He said, "Oh my God, if you're going to sing this song, at least get in key." So he goes to me, "Strangers in the night." I go, "Exchanging glances." He said, "Wondering in the night." And we were singing the song back and forth. We pull into the compound. We get out of the car, and he always give me a sock on the cheek. Say, "Love you, pal." And he socked me on the cheek. Say, "Love you, pal." And I was going back to my bungalow, and I was thinking, if I went back to Harvey, Illinois, and told all the guys in the bar that, you know what I just did? I was riding around with Frank Sinatra singing "Strangers in the Night." They'd say, "Get the heck out of here." But it happened, and I'll never forget it.
You think about the 20th century. I mean, some people might say Bob Hope, some might say Carson. Like, there was nobody in the 20th century that was bigger than him.
No one.
Right?
When you think about in Brazil, 175,000 people came to hear him sing. And you'll see it on the internet. He'll say, "This is the greatest night in my show business career." But, forget about that. Frank Sinatra was not only a singer, the greatest pop singer of all time. No one interpreted lyrics like him. No one. And there's a song called "If You Go Away." If you if you if your love ever leaves you and you're in a bar and that song comes on, if you go away, before the song is over, you'll put a gun in your mouth. Because and also the joy of songs. But forget about that. But he danced with Gene Kelly. Yeah. He won the Academy Award. There has never been a star, I don't think, bigger. You can argue Elvis. You can argue the Beatles. I mean, but there's a single singer like him that so changed the style of singing. You know, Steve Lawrence once said to him, you know, you ruined it for all the rest of us. He said, Steve Lawrence, a great singer. Bob Dylan, read Bob Dylan's quote. Bob Dylan's quote said he was the master. If you're going to be a singer, you have to watch him because he's the journey you have to take. You know?
Well, I have a master and a legendary comedian in front of me, and he's going to be at the Den Theater. Like, tell me how much you love talking to your audience and being in that room and sharing these great stories.
Oh, tonight I'm at the Den Theater tonight, it's at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I did that for a reason, because people like to go to dinner after the show.
Yeah.
So if the show was at 8, then they'd either have to dinner before. But so we're having it at the Den Theater, and like I say, I love stand-up comedy. I'm not going to do this for you, but I wrote a poem many years ago called The Sound of Laughter, and the first lines are, as far back as I can remember, or shortly thereafter, I love to hear the sound of laughter. And the poem goes on and on, but that's what I love to hear the sound of laughter. I'm going out tonight, and I'm going to entertain them with stand-up, but then tell them my journey from Harvey to Hollywood, from this little boy on his hands and knees, shining shoes in a bar in Harvey, Illinois, and Frank Sinatra's on the jukebox. Fast forward, the end of that show is I'm carrying his coffin out of a church in Beverly Hills, California.
Yeah. Full circle.
Yeah, full circle.
Full circle. And again, countless stories on stage at the Den Theater Saturday night. Tickets, and you better get them fast. Go to thedentheater.com for more information. First of all, so great seeing you. I haven't seen you in a long time in person, in studio. I'm glad you came down here to talk to me face-to-face. It's just so much fun.
I enjoy this very much. And, you know, WGN has been part of my career from day one.
Yeah.
You know, way back in the day, way back in WGN TV and WGN Radio, they interviewed
always.
Always interviewed me. And so I've got a soft spot in my heart for GN. You know.
Glad to have you here, pal.
Good to be here.
All right. Much more ahead here on 720 WGN.